All right, shkoch everyone for coming. So the shiur, we're going to start off with a little bit of a analysis into the mechanics of these laws, and then run through some of the practical application of the laws. And really, every case is very unique and has to be asked. But we're just going to try to lay out some of the factors that are significant in these rules. As we saw in the sources, the Gemara in Gittin learns from the pasuk that says Eila Mishpatim Asher Tatzim Lifneihem, that these are the laws you put in front of the elders, that there's a rule you can only put your court cases in front of the elders, not in front of secular or non-Jewish courts, and not in front of unauthorized judges. And that the Gemara learns it from a pasuk, and the Tashbitz in fact speaks out, that's also in the source sheets, that he understands it's an Isser Daraisa, that is a biblical prohibition. The Torah prohibits taking litigation to secular non-Jewish courts. And Shulchan Aruch paskins this halacha that it is in fact aser. But the Shulchan Aruch, quoting the Rambam, says that what the Gemara does not say, the Gemara just says you can't do it. Says the Shulchan Aruch that, but if you can't get your money through Jewish court because the other litigant won't come with you and he won't listen and you won't be able to have a proper trial, so then you can go to Beis Din and try to summons him to the Jewish court. If he won't come, go to them and get permission, and they can give permission for you to take him to civil court. Okay, so the glaring question here is, and this is a question that Kli Chemda asks, is that how on earth does that work? Here we have something that's forbidden to do. The Torah says, the Gemara learns it from a verse in the Torah, that it's forbidden to take to litigate in secular court. So how could you say that? Yeah, but if you can't get your money and you're going to lose, so then you can. It's very hard to understand. So there's different ways to understand what the mechanics are of being allowed to do it, and there are practical differences that potentially would come out from based on how you understand the mechanics of why you're allowed to go to civil court in a case where it doesn't work in Beis Din. The Chassam Sofer understands that the way it works is that when you go to Beis Din and get permission to go to civil court, the civil court is actually, so to speak, acting on the agency of Beis Din. It's like the civil court as the long arm of Beis Din. And that's similar, comparable to what we saw in the Gemara, also in the source sheets, that describes how you can have a non-Jewish enforcer beating somebody up to force them to give a get under the auspices of Beis Din. So the Chassam Sofer understands that's how it works here too. That when you go in, when you file suit in civil court, even though they may never even have heard of Beis Din, but because you're only going to them with the permission of Beis Din, it's as if they're acting under Beis Din's authority. And so it's like Beis Din's doing it and using them as their enforcer. The Vilna Gaon appears to agree with this understanding because he draws that parallel. On this halacha in Shulchan Aruch, he draws the parallel to the case in the Gemara that we saw of the non-Jewish enforcer acting on behalf of the court to beat somebody up to give a get. But this saying this understanding really touches on a very important issue that's discussed in these halachas. The Nesivus says that Beis Din only has a right to give permission to litigate in civil court once they've already ascertained that the defendant is in fact guilty. They have to judge the case, and then they have to decide that he really owes the money. Only then can they send you on to civil court to actually execute collecting that money. Because otherwise, if they can't just say, if he won't come, so just go take it to civil court. Because what if he doesn't owe the money? What if really the defendant is wrong, or the defendant is correct, and he doesn't owe the money, and you send them to civil court, and in civil court they might make him pay improperly? That's the.
How does the basin judge, determine whether he owes the money before they actually have a trial?
I mean, they can't make a formal judgment, but they have to hear the story and try to say to the best of their ability that he, in fact, owes the money based on whatever facts they have that they are aware of.
So the guy actually came to Beis Din. Both of them came to
Beis Din. No. I mean, the guy doesn't want to come to Beis Din. So that's not an option always. He won't come to Beis Din. But they have to work with whatever facts they can gather and try to determine that to the best of their ability that he really owes the money. And you can't technically rule that way because he didn't show up. But they're only allowed to pass it on to civil court once they've determined that he's actually that the plaintiff is actually the winner here. Now, According to that understanding, that works well with the Chassam Sofer, because then you could say that Beis Din is using the secular court as their shliach, as their long arm. Because really, they've already decided that the guy owes the money. They just don't have the power to rule and enforce it. So they like employ, so to speak, the secular court system to execute that. But the Kli Chemda points out that's not the minig, that the prevalent custom is not that way. The prevalent custom is that when one of the litigants refuses to come to a Jewish court, they'll send it to civil court without first determining that the defendant owes the money. And sometimes they can't determine that, and they'll still do it. So it's hard to say, impossible to say perhaps, that they're using the secular court as their agent, as their long arm, when they don't really have an opinion on the matter. Beis Din hasn't decided who's right or wrong. They're really using the secular court not as an enforcer, but the secular court's really judging. So how are we to understand, how do we do that? How does Beis Din have a right to pass on a case to civil court without having first decided who owes the money?
Do you see the fact that the person's refusing to go, it's almost like he's admitting his guilt?
It's hard to say that.
If he's right, then what are you afraid of?
It could be he's not interested. It could be he's afraid that he knows that secular courts will be more friendly to his case. It could be he doesn't trust Beis Din. There's a million reasons. So the Rush that was in the source sheet appears to offer an alternative understanding. He quotes this Rishon that understands in the Gemara that it's like a punitive thing, that because this litigant refused to come to Beis Din as he was supposed to, he was summoned to Beis Din, he refused to come, so we have a right to punish him by taking him to secular court. And whatever secular court does to him, regardless of whether it follows halacha or not, even if the halacha would be contrary, even if the defendant would have won in Beis Din, but he may lose in civil court, and that's fine. He deserves it for refusing to come to Beis Din. We have the right to throw the book at him, and quoting the Gemara, literally we throw a wall at him, but we have the right to punish him extra halachically for refusing to come to Beis Din. Now, that's also hard to understand how that's sufficient, like Bruce Berman pointed out, because it's still against halacha. Even if you want to punish the guy, but it's a chil Hashem to bring him into Beis Din. So you have a right to punish him and make him pay money he might not owe in Beis Din, but it's a chil Hashem to adjudicate a Jew to judge a case in front of the non-Jewish court system. So it could be that, I think Rav Moshe Sternbach works with this understanding, that it's a combination of the two. The two work together. That Beis Din can use the secular court system as their agent to punish him. That's really how it's working. It's not a chil Hashem because you aren't deferring to them over Beis Din. Beis Din is using them, but not using them to enforce their ruling because they never made a ruling. They're actually using the court system to punish the defendant, if that's the case, the defendant, for refusing to come to Beis Din by adjudicating the case, even if that means that he would lose money that he wouldn't otherwise lose. Okay, that's one explanation. The Kli Chemda himself offers a different explanation, and he says that because, as we saw in the sources in the Rashi and the Rambam, Rambam, that the issue here is a chil Hashem, that by going to secular court and to non-Jewish court, you show deference to their system over the Torah system. You show that as if you're holding their legal system and their rules as chas v'shalom on a higher plane than Torah law. And that's a tremendous chil Hashem. So in as much as that's the underlying issue, so the Kli Chemda argues that by first going to Beis Din and trying the process of going to Beis Din, that demonstrates that you're not deferring to them, but rather you gave proper deference to halacha. Halacha was just your first choice, and because that wasn't operable, it didn't work for you, so therefore, for lack of any choice, you have the right to then go to secular court, and the chil Hashem is addressed. Okay. So now, the question, according to that opinion, is what's the point of going to Beis Din? If basically we have two possibilities in front of us. Either the reason why it's okay is because the secular court is actually operating as an extension of Beis Din, or The reason is because once you've shown that you want to go to Beis Din, so then you no longer have an issue of Chilul Hashem if you end up going to civil court. So now, according to the first opinion, we understand why you need permission. That's the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch, the Rambam says, you can't just try to go to Beis Din and then go to secular court. You have to have permission from authorized the Heter Erkos, permission from the Beis Din, preferably even in writing, right? Why do you need that? If it's because, if the understanding is that Beis Din is, that the secular court is the agent of Beis Din, so we understand that you need an appointment of agency. They have to write it out because they have to, Beis Din has to create that authorization. They have to appoint them, so to speak, to be their long arm. But if it's really just addressing the Chilul Hashem, I tried, it didn't work, now I'm going to go to secular court. So why do you need Beis Din to give you formal permission? Just try, and if it doesn't work, go on your own. So so there's several possibilities. The Yam Shel Shlomo actually sounds like technically you don't. That really, according to Torah law, strict letter of the law, you wouldn't need to. It's actually a rabbinic injunction that says, don't just do that, get it in writing. But really, according to the letter of law, it wouldn't be necessary, and we can understand that very well, why it wouldn't be necessary according to this explanation, because Chilul Hashem's dealt with once you try to go to Beis Din. The Kesef Kedoshim says that, sorry, one second. Right. So the Kesef Kedoshim says that, in fact, if there is a compelling reason to assume that somebody won't agree, you actually don't need permission. According to that distinction that he makes, that if anytime there's like a really strong argument that he won't, that the person won't come to Beis Din, you don't need permission in writing, seems to indicate that the reason why you need permission is really for Beis Din to decide whether or not the guy is really not coming to Beis Din. In other words, If in fact the person is refusing to come to Beis Din, you don't need permission. Sounds like the purpose of the permission is that we don't want you deciding on your own that this guy's not listening. You know, you left a message on his answering machine and you decide, oh, he didn't call me back, we're going to secular court. Beis Din wants to hear that and say, did you try speaking to him in person? Did you try this? Did you try that? Beis Din has to make an educated decision, and they have to be the one to call the fact that this guy is in fact refusing to come. But according to that reasoning, like the Kesef Kedoshim says, if, like we'll see in the case of a non-Jewish litigant or somebody who's very removed from Torah observance, so where it's highly unlikely, or a giant corporation where there's like no way in the world that they're going to agree to go sit down in front of three rabbis in Brooklyn, right? So then you wouldn't really need official permission from Beis Din, because it's really only there, according to this argument, it's really only there to determine that you're correct in your assumption that this person has in fact refused to come to Beis Din. Okay, contemporary Achronim suggest a third possibility, that you really only demonstrate your deference to halacha when you go to Beis Din, when you actually go to Beis Din first. It's not enough just to say, I really would have preferred Beis Din, but it's not going to work, so I can go to secular court. You need a graphic demonstration, a very clear demonstration that you prefer Beis Din. So you have to go through this whole process to make it to properly address the Chilul Hashem. So okay, so those are three possibilities as to why it would be necessary to go through this process, or when it would be necessary to go through this process of getting written permission from Beis Din before going to secular court. If the reason why you can go to secular court is because it addresses the Chilul Hashem. Now here's a few practical differences between these reasons. Number one is relying on a compelling assumption, right? We said if the other person isn't Jewish, or there are lots of cases where it's like pretty compelling that there's no way in the world this guy is going to actually come to Beis Din and allow this case to be judged in Beis Din. So now if the mechanics of the permission to go to secular court is only that the secular court is acting as the agent, the long arm of Beis Din, so it doesn't really matter what assumptions you have. Beis Din needs to be involved. Beis Din needs to be the ones that appoint him as the agent. So even if you have your compelling assumptions, you would still need to go to Beis Din. Whereas, like we said, if it's because you're the Chilul Hashem, so the Chilul Hashem doesn't really start, potentially, if it's a given that he wouldn't go to Beis Din, because there's no deference shown to secular court system over Beis Din if going to Beis Din wasn't even an option in the first place, because the other litigant would never come. Another practical difference would be a place that doesn't have a Beis Din. If you live in a place where Beis Din's not accessible, you're far away from any other options, the local town doesn't have a Beis Din, it's not uncommon, out of town. So again, if you need a mechanics of shlichos, it doesn't matter if there's no Beis Din, you still need someone to appoint the secular court you're going to as the agent of Beis Din, and you don't have that. Whereas, in fact, if you say it's because of Chil Hashem, so then there would be no Chil Hashem potentially. This is all kind of theoretical. Potentially, because everybody knows there's no Beis Din here, so that's why I went to secular court, because there was no Beis Din. The Chuvas HaRashba says that if you're in a place where there are no Dayanim, so then we appoint a panel of people to arbitrate to prevent them from going to secular to prevent them from going to secular court. So you see, the Rashba holds that secular court's not an option, even in the absence of Dayanim. You can't just go into Dayanim. He seems to hold that you need this mechanics of a proper agency. So it doesn't matter that there's no Beis Din, says the Rashba. You still can't go to secular court. So we'll do anything we can to prevent you from going to secular court, including setting up an arbitration panel of well-meaning Jews who aren't necessarily Torah scholars. Okay.
How do we deal with a simple case that Mondays and Thursdays, everybody from little cities would go into the big cities for court and Megillah and whatever else, with the opinion that says if there's no Beis Din, just go ahead and go to secular court?
Well, they had an option. It's more...
very far removed, village.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, nowadays it's a problem. Nowadays, there are plenty of places where it's really difficult to get to a Beis Din in many cities. So it wouldn't be unheard of. And the Rashba was writing in Europe also, apparently not uncommon.
Well, that make a difference today? It's not so complicated to go somewhere today. Get in a car, get in a plane, you can get there quickly.
I don't know. If that, you can debate whether or not that's called convenient. I don't know. Again, it's kind of theoretical. I'm not saying we pass in this way. But in theory, you could argue that, you know, it's very difficult for me to do that. So there's no Chil Hashem demonstrated by me going to a local civil court rather than every time we have to meet to judge, we have to get on an airplane and spend a fortune and spend a day traveling back and forth. On the other hand, the Rivash writes in a place that he writes that a certain person should have gone to Beis Din because there was one. It sounds like the way he writes it, that the only reason why there was an expectation to go to Beis Din over civil court in that case was because there was a Beis Din present. It sounds like he understood that had there not been a Beis Din, that it would have been justified to go to secular court. That sounds like the other opinion, that because there's no Chil Hashem involved, then it would have been okay to go to civil court in the absence of a Beis Din. Another practical difference would be, perhaps, what kind of permission you need. If the mechanics is an agency of Beis Din, so the permission needs to come from a Beis Din. It needs to come from a Beis Din with all the power invested in it to do whatever we want to do, and then they can appoint the secular court to act on their behalf. Whereas if it's the question of Chil Hashem, so then you may not need a full Beis Din. You just need some demonstration that you would have preferred halacha over the secular court system. And in fact, it's a machloka. Some posts can require permission to come from a full proper Beis Din. The Ma'aril Diskin says that you need a Beis Din, but it doesn't need to be a Beis Din with authority, with jurisdiction. It could be a Beis Din that's somewhere else that has no jurisdiction over this person. So that Beis Din doesn't have the power to appoint an agent over this litigant. And Ma'aril Diskin still holds it sufficient. And Rav Vosner holds that you don't even need a Beis Din. You could just go to any leading halachic authority. A single Rav has to be certain stature, but you can go to any halachic authority, and he himself has the power to give you permission to go to secular court. So that discussion may depend on this issue. Another practical difference is what happens if after Beis Din already authorized going to secular court, the defendant changes his mind and says, you know what, forget it, changed my mind, I'm prepared to go to Beis Din now. So now if it's a question of agency, so then the agency was handed over already. So it could be that it's binding, or it's still there, it's in effect. If it's about the Chil Hashem, so then you could argue, this is again somewhat theoretical, but you could argue that now there's a Chil Hashem again, because now you have the option of going to Beis Din. Both parties are in agreement to go to Beis Din, and the refusal to do so when it's a viable option remains a Chil Hashem. And the last practical difference...
They could go back if they both are willing to still...
They certainly could, right? What happened? Do you have to? Or do you lose the heter? Does the heter null and void? If he says, forget it, I'm ready to go to Beis Din, is the heter still in effect or not? And
does Beis Din make their heter contingent when they say that people can go?
Could they? Yeah.
Like they'll say it's contingent on him, on whoever you're... opposition is continuing to refuse to come to Bezdin.
I think so. This is more like the theoretical alumnus. What if, you know, if they didn't?
What if he's losing the case in the cycle court?
That's a good question. We'll see a little bit about that. This is even before anything starts. Okay, and the last practical difference that we'll discuss for now is what happens if the heter was given under false pretenses? What happens if there was misinformation involved given to Beis Din that led to them giving the heter? So now if, and the Rambam says that such a case, the heter doesn't work. So now if it's an agency, Beis Din gives agency power to the secular court, so to speak. So if they only gave that under false pretenses, it wouldn't work. But you can argue that if it's a Chil Hashem issue, the fact that I went through the motions of, even though in the process of doing so I was a crooked guy, but or there was a misunderstanding, it doesn't necessarily involve malice, there was some misunderstanding, but the fact that I went through the motions of trying to go through the proper channels would have addressed the Chil Hashem, whether or not the decision was made on sound facts or not. Okay, now to the practical halacha. So the halacha, as we mentioned, applies even if both parties agree, because it's not just an issue of improperly making the other person pay. Even if they both are in agreement to go, it's still a problem because of the Chil Hashem aspect. It's the fact that the two of you are demonstrating deference, as we've mentioned, deference to secular law or secular law over Torah law is the primary problem in and of itself. Another issue, any award that's given above and beyond what halacha would have awarded is stolen money. Besides the fact that you shouldn't go there, but if the secular courts, for many reasons, awards more money than halacha would have awarded, you're not entitled to that money. It's theft. Whatever you're entitled to in halacha, you're entitled to. Anything above and beyond that is stolen money and has to be returned. This is definitely without permission. With permission is something else.
It's not above and beyond. It's any money you get.
Well, some of it might be genuinely owed. It was achieved through improper means. But if you owe the money, you owe the money. If you do, right. If you don't, then you owe all of it, right. Mm-hmm. Now, any expenses incurred by the defendant as a result of being sued improperly in civil court also have to be paid back by the plaintiff. So if he improperly forces him to go to Beis Din, and in the process of doing that, he has to hire a lawyer and things like that, so he may... my understanding was that the plaintiff that's part of the damage that the plaintiff has caused the defendant by going against halacha and taking him to civil court, and all of that would have to be reimbursed.
The other way. The plaintiff is the one that now has to go get the lawyer and stuff to go to court because the defendant didn't want to go to court.
I don't know. I don't know. Could be also. Not sure. Why isn't that a grumma? Not sure. Let's leave it for now. It could be even without it. Why isn't it a grumma? It's more of a knas.
Either way.
A grumma is like causing an indirect damage. This is not like a direct. If he has to hire a lawyer, it's not a direct damage that you cause. Normally you can't be held legally accountable for indirect cause damages. It could be a penalty, but you have to know the source for that. I think in the Gemara, in the Rishonim, there's a source for penalizing for doing this, and it could be that's included in that, but I'm not sure if that's clear here. Okay. Now, typically, in practical, how it's done, Beis Din will try three times to get a defendant to come in. Just for example, a defendant, usually, let's say the plaintiff wants to bring the defendant in, defendant wants him to come. Beis Din will try three times to get him to come, and then if that doesn't work, typically, at that point, they will issue a heter if applicable. And again, every single case is so different that a question has to be asked every time, but that's typically what's done. Now, there's a discussion that we hinted to before about whether or not the Beis Din can offer a heter, Beis Din can offer a heter regarding their knowledge of the case and their knowledge of the validity of the claims. As we mentioned, the Nesiva says that Beis Din is only allowed to give a heter if they have already ascertained that the defendant owes the money. It's just a question of, he owes the money, we're not going to be able to get it, let's send him to Beis Din to get the money. The Aruch HaShulchan says a little bit less than that. He says they should listen to the claim and they should see if it sounds valid. They don't have to decide very decisively that for sure they owe the money, but they have to know that it's a good, it's a decent case, and it's not a bunch of baloney. And others say they can just offer a blanket heter and go ahead. If the guy doesn't want to come to Beis Din, it's not our problem. Let secular court deal with it. And as what I saw indicated that the prevailing custom in Beis Din nowadays is basically like the Imre Bina, that it's a free-for-all, but they try to hear the case a little bit and a little bit like the Aruch HaShulchan, and it, to try to weed out totally frivolous lawsuits and things like that. So if there's any possibility that it might that there might be validity here, they'll send it on to civil court. But if it's like off the wall, they're not gonna give a head there. Okay. As mentioned, there's a disagreement about who you need to ask. Some require a full Beis Din to give authority. The Chuvas HaRush says that if you have a contractual clause that says that if one of the parties refuses to go to Beis Din, then you'll go to secular court, you actually don't need a proper heter from Beis Din at all. The clause itself is sufficient, assuming that one of the parties refuses.
And that clause is made before you did a deal with this guy?
Yeah, right. And the deal that you're fighting about, if there's already an existing contract that says in the event that about this deal one of us refuses to go to Beis Din, then we'll go to secular court. That's sufficient. I don't know if that's
why, why on earth would that be sufficient? If they can't do it afterwards, let's say the person decides and refuses to go to Beis Din, so then they can't say, we'll just march over to the Beis court. Why can't they do that?
Well, it doesn't make the guy right for refusing. This is in lieu of a heter. He has no right to refuse.
If they didn't have the clause, they'd have to go to Beis Din, right?
Right.
To get permission.
Right.
So how do they work around that by just making an agreement amongst themselves that in the event that you refuse to go to Beis Din, now we can skip that process?
It depends on the mechanics of the heter. If the permission to go is because of the Chel Hashem, so there could be that having in writing this understanding.
That would increase the Chel Hashem.
Why?
Now you're memorializing the fact that you're not going to go to Beis Din.
No, but I'm suggesting just that it formalizes the fact that the only reason we're going is because of a refusal, maybe, right? That's just a suggestion. It's a good question. And I can't say for sure that the halacha follows this opinion to ask. But and again, as I mentioned, Vosner was of the opinion that you don't even need a full Beis Din to give permission. It's enough to go to a big, a leading authority, however that's defined. Okay. As mentioned, according to many poskim, any amount of money, this is true even with a heter, any amount of money above and beyond what halacha would have given has to be returned. This is now with permission, according to many poskim. There's another question about legal fees. It's pretty complicated. Who pays whose legal fees? And it really sometimes the plaintiff has to pay the defendant. Sometimes the defendant has to pay the plaintiff. Sometimes it's a wash, even if it's different numbers. But sometimes everyone stands where they stand. Complicated. The factors that are taken into consideration are whether or not they went to civil court against halacha, or they went properly, meaning there was a refusal to go to Beis Din, but they didn't get a proper heter, or if they went with a heter. Those are all factors that are considered. The SMA makes a distinction. This is talking about legal fees. Yeah. Legal. Right. It's a question of who caused the unnecessary expenses that are involved in going to secular court over Beis Din, right? So those are factors. The SMA makes a distinction between whether the defendant lost or not. If the defendant refused to go to Beis Din and then he ends up being vindicated, so then the SMA says, okay, so then he doesn't have to pay anything because he was right all along. He didn't owe the money all along anyway. He makes that distinction. The Nesivus explains that's only true when the claim was made in bad faith. So if the claim is made in good faith, and according to Nesivus, and then ends up that the defendant won, so then he's still a bad guy for refusing. But if someone comes up with a claim that was nonsense, and the defendant says, like, you're out of your mind, and I'm not bothering to go to Beis Din with you, and he gets sued and taken to secular court, and he ends up winning, and the secular court says this guy's nuts for claiming this money in the first place, so then he's not on the hook, even though he refused to go to Beis Din, he's not on the hook for the plaintiff's legal fees, because the plaintiff in that case was acting in bad faith.
Wasn't he also acting in bad faith by refusing to go to Beis Din?
He didn't do the right thing, perhaps, but he's not penalized for that. According to the Sma and the Nesivus. Now, interesting point. The standard of proof in secular court is different than it is in Beis Din. There are a lot of things that are admissible in secular court that wouldn't be admissible in Beis Din in terms of determining responsibility. So it's an interesting point that when you have a heter to go to secular court, all that stuff is fine. You don't have to like follow the rules governing Beis Din when you go to secular court. Once you have a heter, once you have permission to go to secular court, you're entitled to bring any proof and that's valid in according to the secular law. And the reason is that by refusing to go to Beis Din, the litigant, whoever it was that was refusing, gave up the protections of Beis Din. He gave up the protections of the rules governing Beis Din. He's basically acquiescing to allowing witnesses to testify against him that wouldn't be valid in Beis Din because he's forcing the issue to go to Beis Din. There's a separate issue of the legal process and what's called evidence, etc., and what's actually owed. There's a separate question of how much money is actually properly owed. But if Reuven owes Shimon genuinely a certain sum of money, and the way the secular court arrived at that conclusion was through witnesses that wouldn't have been admissible in Beis Din, it doesn't matter how they got to that point. Point is, as long as their decision is in line, the decision, the actual monetary amount is in line with halacha, then the money is owed, and the fact this is just a means of getting that money. And again, it was the litigant's fault for not going to Beis Din that he submitted himself to the system that accepts testimony that would otherwise be inadmissible or evidence. Okay, now, also, if a defendant, for example, refuses to go to Beis Din and going to secular court will involve penalties that would not be, that Beis Din would never have applied. So that's also okay, because that's all considered self-inflicted. Because, similar to what we just said about you give up, by refusing to go to Beis Din, you give up the protections of the halakhic legal system of what's called acceptable proof. You also submit yourself to whatever the secular laws are in terms of punishing a guy and penalties that are attached to that. It's your problem. In fact, interesting point, side point really, the Marshag understands that that's why you need written permission from Beis Din. We want you, like as we pointed out, really you could have said that the fact that I tried to go to Beis Din is sufficient reason to be able to go to secular court because there's no Chil Hashem. He understands that the reason why you go to Beis Din first is because we want Beis Din to try to figure out how we could proceed with minimize any peripheral damage to this guy, like penalties and things like that. So we try to do it in a way that's minimally damaging out beyond the actual money owed. Okay. Having a heter from Beis Din does not, sorry, I'm a little over time. Having a heter from Beis Din does not allow for criminal proceedings. And any unnecessary information that leads to criminal issues is like mesira. It's like handing somebody over to the authorities for it to be punished, something you're not allowed to do. If it's relevant to the monetary case, it seems like you're allowed to do it. But to add details that'll get a person, and certainly to file charges, criminal charges against somebody in secular court, is mesira. Now, Shaila has to be asked when it's appropriate, when it's not appropriate, but this is a separate issue from the heter here to litigate financial cases.
If it's something that's inevitable, it's going to happen, though.
Yeah.
Beis Din knows that when they're allowing him to go, that it's going to happen.
Yeah. That seems that that's fine. I think we'll talk about that. That's something that he's submitting himself to by refusing to adjudicate the financial case in Beis Din. Now, if the defendant does tshuva and he wants to come back and he wants to come into Beis Din, generally, Beis Din will retract the heter. If this is before, as we discussed, before they go to the court actually gives a ruling. Once the court issues a ruling, so according to Ashkenazi poskim, the secular court's ruling stands, and Beis Din generally won't touch the case anymore. There's some distinction, there's some argument, it might depend who loses the case and who wins the case. Some say that if the defendant loses, he can appeal to Beis Din, but once the defendant wins, that's it. Then Beis Din won't touch it anymore. Some say it depends if the defendant made an effort to go to Beis Din before the case was already resolved. Once it was resolved, we don't touch it no matter what. The Isser applies even if the other party is unobservant, but typically in cases where it's clear to Beis Din that the person won't come, they'll try minimally to see if a person will agree to come to Beis Din, and they'll quickly give a heter generally because they understand that generally it doesn't work otherwise. Really, this law applies to when you're litigating against a non-Jew also, but because it's like so obvious that a non-Jew wouldn't agree to come into Beis Din, I think the prevailing custom is that you could file a lawsuit against a non-Jewish defendant in secular court without getting a formal heter, because it's just a given that he's not going to, he won't come to Beis Din. As far as testifying in a civil case without a heter, are you allowed to testify? So lalacha, if you have Jews that are in court, in secular court, and you're a witness. So a witness by testifying doesn't transgress the actual law governing going to a trial, because you're not one of the litigants. You're also not what's called lifne iver, which is helping somebody do an avera. They're doing an avera here because you're not enabling it. They could do it without you. They don't need you to be here. They're here without you. So you're not making it happen. So it's not the Torah prohibition of enabling an avera. But there is still a rabbinic injunction against assisting in any way. And you are assisting. So you should not volunteer to testify in a case, in a Jewish case, against another Jew in secular court. There are those that say that if you should testify for the whoever's right to prevent the secular court from taking money from where it doesn't belong. And in any event, if a defendant was taken to secular court improperly, you can always testify in his behalf because he shouldn't be there in the first place. Somebody who is sued in court, let's say a Jew sues another Jew, and you're the defendant, you're being sued to go to secular court. You don't really have a choice in the matter. But so technically, you could just go. But apparently, some say it is still worthwhile to go to Beis Din and get a written heter for you to go. But you don't really have a choice. You're going to go either way. Now, being an attorney, this is very practical. How does this apply to a Jewish lawyer? So if the plaintiff has no permission, if the plaintiff sued without having permission from Beis Din, you can represent the defendant in Beis Din because you're protecting him from an improper prosecution. If the plaintiff approaches a Jewish attorney, and he is again talking about where the plaintiff does not have permission, they're going against halacha, so the attorney should attempt, and that shaila has to be asked, I'm just saying general ideas, the attorney should attempt to convince them, the plaintiff, to adjudicate in Beis Din. Now, lifne iver, again, the biblical prohibition of helping someone do an avera only applies when they need you. So unless, rare case, unless you're the only attorney who is willing to file the suit or is able to file the suit for some reason, then you're not technically enabling it because they'll just hire a different lawyer or they'll file it themselves. But again, you are still, there's still the rabbinic problem of helping them, but it's different. We'll see. The rabbinic problem is a little bit more limited. Another issue is that if you're a better lawyer than any other lawyer they'd get, and you're gonna have them win more money than they would have won improperly, so then that is your problem, because that money's stolen. Any money they win above and beyond what halacha would authorize is stolen money. And if you're better than the next guy, then you're really enabling, you're making that happen, that extra theft. And that would be a deraisa, a Torah prohibition. There's a limitation, according to some opinions, that the rabbinic injunction against helping someone do an avera, even if you're not a necessary component, but you're helping them along, only applies when they're doing the avera inadvertently. If they know they're doing the wrong thing and they do it anyway, according to some, it's not your problem anymore to help them. So, since, generally speaking, that's the issue we're talking about, this rabbinic injunction of helping them do an avera, so there are, under some circumstances, you can ask a rav, under certain circumstances, there'll be those that will rely on the lenient opinion that you could participate in as much as they know they're doing the wrong thing and you're not, you're only helping them, you're not enabling. Okay, the Shulchan Aruch though says that that somebody who violates this gets put in excommunication. So that implies that there's something going on here, that this, even someone who helps gets excommunicated. So that implies that there's something more here than just the usual problem of helping someone do an avera. The halacha seems to attach a little more stringency to this one. So there's it's not so simple, but a shaila has to be asked. Okay, according to many poskim, you don't need a heter once you have a ruling from Bezdin to go to secular court to enforce Bezdin's ruling. According to many poskim, you don't need a heter for that. Winding down. Even though the, like we discussed, the underlying reasoning that we were presented with is that it shows deference to non-Jewish, to other belief systems, non-Jewish belief systems, but it applies to completely secular law also because it's similar. It's showing deference to some other wisdom, even if it's not a religious wisdom, some other wisdom above and beyond Torah. Now, submitting to arbitration is okay. You can submit to an arbitration, which is just a board of people that decide. But the poskim say that it has to be that they're deciding based on their own sense of fairness. They can't be applying any laws. You can sit down with a bunch of people or one person and say, you arbitrate over us. But it's only permissible if they're making their decisions based on their own sense of what seems fair and right under the circumstances, not if they're basing it on some philosophy or some legal system other than halacha. There's a discussion about if you have a clause. Basically, if you have a clause in the contract that says that the venue of litigation will be a civil court, generally we assume that doesn't work, and we interpret that to mean, this is the Rush's opinion, we interpret that to mean only in the event that one party refuses, not if they both agree, not if they both agree to go to Beis Din. Important point that it's practically speaking, it's really prudent when you're having a contract ahead of time to specify that any litigation that comes up will be dealt with in Beis Din, and it's especially prudent to specify a specific Beis Din, because even within Beis Din there are many that are very, very good, and it's important to know. Rabbi Haber emphasized this point to me, that there are some Beis Dins that are very professional and know what they're doing. Legally, halachically, they're wise and fair, et cetera, and professional. But there are many that are not. And getting into a fight about which Beis Din and trying to play games is not something you want to be into. So really what you want to do is ahead of time determine exactly how you want these things dealt with and have that all in the contract ahead of time so that there's no funny business. Maybe we should stop. There's some more points here. I'm going to skip over things because we're past over time. Just an interesting discussion that's very practical is how this all applies to cases involving insurance companies, right? Where you have malpractice and you have car accidents and things like that. So in those cases, people really want to go to court. Even Erlicha people want to go to court because if you go in Beis Din, the insurance company won't pay for it. So you want to go to civil court so that the insurance company will cover the losses. So problem is that suing the insurance company is fine, but generally speaking, that's not what's going on. Generally speaking, the lawsuit is always against the Jewish defendant, and the role of the insurance company is to indemnify, to cover the losses of the defendant. So really, you're suing a Jew in secular court. So that many poskim are of the opinion that since everybody understands what's really going on is you're there to get the insurance company, even though technically you're suing your fellow Jew, but you're there to the insurance company. So it's comparable really to suing a non-Jewish party. There are other factors that are taken into account. Like some present an argument that that in certain fields where people only deal with certain professionals because they're insured, doctors perhaps, driving a car is another example, you have to have insurance, and people only agree to engage in dealings with doctors or driving because there's an assumption that if in the event of something going wrong, there's recourse by going to the insurance companies. They wouldn't hire you or whatever if they knew that if anything goes wrong, it's them against you. They only did it because, so there's an understanding that as the professional, you agree to let them sue your insurance company because otherwise nobody would come to you. Nobody would use you as a doctor. No one would use you as whatever profession it is. You agree ahead of time, and what that does is, amongst other things, is gets you off the hook for playing for increased premiums, which is another issue. That if you sue somebody and their premiums go up as a result, are you liable for that? There are poskim that say that in some cases you have to reimburse them for their increased premiums if you sue them, and sue their insurance company. Because even, again, even if you'll argue that the lawsuit's against the non-Jewish insurance company, so to speak, but the resulting increase in premiums is on the Jewish litigant, and that was improper. So either some say you have to pay that back, some argue that in certain situations, not a private homeowner, but like a business arrangement or a professional relationship, there's this understanding that the professional agrees to take on that responsibility, the possibility, the potential of having to pay higher premiums if anything goes wrong. That's only if the premiums go up because of the loss in the court case. Sometimes the insurance company will raise the premiums because of the actual event, the fact that you got into a car accident itself, nothing to do with they lost the money on you, but the fact that they see you're irresponsible or that you're considered a higher risk because this event occurred, then it's nothing to do with the lawsuit anymore. I mean, it's just the facts. Maybe the lawsuit brought it to their attention, but that's not your problem. You didn't do anything wrong. The facts that they became aware of are the reason that they raised the premium. Okay, that's many of the laws. There's some more details, but basically, long story short, there are very good vati din out there. Every case has to be asked specifically because there's no two cases that are comparable. And have a happy Thanksgiving.